Well, bummer for you guys. It's just Dan and I this week. I hope you're not getting fatigued with just Dan. Did you see the segue I gave you there? We're 20 minutes too early for. Big thanks to the Larkins last week. That episode got a ton of positive feedback. Made me feel kind of lame about the quote unquote cool things I've done in my life, but you know, that's okay. Comparison is the thief of joy, I guess. I was talking to Tessa about it after, and I was like, that's crazy. Like, even for Larkin stuff, that's crazy.
That was pretty crazy.
That's pretty crazy.
I thought about the most interesting Strava poll question I'm going to ask today.
Mm.
And I don't think Tate or Elijah will be able to answer it.
Ooh. Well, Tessa asked me, she's like, so why did they do this? And I wasn't able to give a great answer. I'm like, I don't know, man. Why does the wind whistle through the trees? Like, it's just the way that nature goes. You mm-hmm. know, the sun comes up, the Larkins do crazy stuff, the sun goes down, right? In the meantime, we have a lot of Nika stuff to run over. I'll just hit the big cycling world news from this week was the Vuelta. The last Grand Tour of the year is over. We're really into the fall series of the bike calendar. King Roglic IV put a pretty, I know I didn't come up with that, Cycling News did, but put a pretty firm kind of cap, you know, like basically they let somebody else carry the red jersey and do all the work for two and a half weeks. And then he just went and absolutely stomped the heck out of everyone. Actually saying later that he was sick at the end and he still was just head and shoulders above the rest. So bravo to them, the Red Bull Bora team. You know, finally getting some good results after a pretty dismal early season.
Does everyone on that team get a Red Bull helmet?
So this is interesting. No, they're not. So like Wout van Aert is a Red Bull athlete where you get the helmet. Like Danny McCaskill is a Red Bull athlete. Red Bull sponsors the team, but they don't get the actual Red Bull helmet. Even though there is Red Bull stuff on their helmet, I don't think they individually become. Because you have to remember, like, there's a lot of guys on that team who make $60,000 a year. And their job is to do one pull at the GPD, whoever cares, in Belgium. You know, like, it's still like a World Tour cycling team. But that was good. I think in more salient news, we had a lot of... Oh, I have to shout out really quick. Local legend and mom of former Maybird rider, Ryder Jordan. Cheryl Jordan, gravel national champion.
She's a national champ. That's cool. So cool.
Super, super cool. Do want to shout that out. Christoph, I think, had a good result there, too. He had been involved in the team. I forget where he finished. I don't think he listens anyway, but congratulations to the people who participated in Gravel Nationals. Did want to throw out that out there. As far as Nika goes though, we'll do our best not to have this be a whole nother Nika podcast, but what do we got?
My gosh, I've got like so many cool Nika shout outs. And I tried to look through the results spend a little bit more time looking through the results, but there's just too much stuff we can't share.
As always.
So if I missed something that was like blaringly cool or whatever, please just let us know and we'll get you.
Yeah.
But so it was just super fun. So our division was in Cedar City. We just had a lot of fun down there. And so probably the best part of it was I discovered Pizza Cart's breadsticks.
Oh, they do. So are their breadsticks just, is it one of those things where they're just cooking up a crust, slapping some butter and garlic on it and then calling it? Okay.
But it was like, I swear it was like better than the pizza. It was insane.
Okay.
And so.
Hang on. No, but then if the pizza is just that plus sauce and toppings,
it was so garlicky and buttery and it was just amazing. So we actually, we got the, I went down with Amy, but what was so awesome is we got to take Ruby Derrick down with us.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to shout Ruby Derrick out because, well, first of all, she is like super, super cool. And she made it so much more fun than if I just drove down with Amy alone.
Well, low bar, but you know.
But she actually listens to our podcast.
And hey, shout out. There you go.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Like, so we actually have another cool listener.
You know? Amy Larkin, man, just pumping our stats. Yeah, I love it. So, we need to get some bots to listen to this so that we can get some like paid ad stuff going on, huh?
Yeah, probably.
Like a Squarespace ad or something.
So yeah, so we drove down with Ruby, and then we actually had dinner with the Derricks at Pizza Cart, and they bought just so much food. it was just like being in heaven almost. And it was just so fun.
If you're new to this, Pizza Cart is...
not a sponsor, but we're a really good advertiser for them.
I think we might like let them sponsor us for free, and we'll just pitch their... like, I don't know if we've hit Pizza Cart this year yet, because that's usually an off-season thing. It's in Cedar City.
Oh, I went twice in 1 week.
Oh, it's borderline worth it just for the drive to Cedar City. Like, if you told me you're going to drive to Cedar City to eat there, 3 hours south,
oh, I would.
I don't think you'd be crazy for that. No. It's... and I know that sounds hyperbolic, but it's... oh man, I need to get down there.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was fun hanging out with the Derek family. They're just the cutest family ever. I don't know, maybe not Rocky, but the rest of them are pretty cute.
Rocky's so cute.
Rocky's cute. You're
right. But which region are we again?
This is region 2. We were down in Cedar City, and okay. I just kind of got a little sidetracked there. Another person I want to shout out is Arlie Pankey was down there. And she was down there cheering on all the varsity girls, which is interesting because she knows, like, she knew like pretty much all the varsity girls racing except just a few, but she doesn't have any Nike kids racing and drove down to Cedar City to cheer people on, which I think is just super, super cool.
And like, it's insanely cool when parents help. It's insanely, insanely cool when people who don't have a kid who's actively doing it anymore still volunteer their time.
Yeah, and just drive down and to cheer people. And the Larkins do that as well. Their kids are all out of Nike and they'll show up to the races and cheer people on. I just think that's super cool, you know. So I'll just go over some results real quick. I'll start with region 3, which they raced in Price. Okay. And so varsity boys, three Maybird riders were on the varsity boys podium.
Why'd you say that like a Canadian? Three boys were on the varsity podium, eh? Oh, they crushed it. We got them poutine after and everything.
Oh, man. I wish I was more responsible for editing this. This
would make me sound better. Well, there you go.
But anyhow, Calvin Christensen was third.
Oh, ooh, awesome, dude. Awesome result. Very well-deserved result, too, man. That kid puts in the work.
Cole Horner was fourth.
There you go.
And then Reese Tillman had an awesome result. He got seventh. So,
dude, no way.
He is such a cool kid.
I love Reese.
Yeah. JVA, we had a couple podium spots. I think this is one of your boys, Alex Linscott.
Oh, dude, I love the Linscotts, man. Alex and his dad, Luke Linscott's like one of the best people who's ever helped me coach. He's killer.
Everyone loves that guy.
He's a freak, dude. Go ride with him sometime. He's a freak. His boy Alex is great. I'm just not surprised to see it, man. He's got so much talent. He'll be as good as he wants to be.
Yeah, he was on the JVA podium. And thing is, the JVA field is so ginormous, which is kind of a big deal. So Colin Delicis.
Yep, another one of my boys.
Fourth.
Yep.
So varsity girls in Region 3 out in Price was like just super cool. So Brooklyn Schallenberger, she got first by like a minute and a half. Good solid.
Oh,
yeah.
Jeez.
Ella Balls was third. Stella fourth. Sam Shaw sixth. Lauren Montague seventh. And like, it just keeps going on.
That's a pretty stacked field.
Yeah. So those girls just did awesome. JVA girls. I know we've mentioned this one before, but Emma Daly, she won it pretty handsomely again. But Ava Anderson got second in that race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's an up-and-coming name if you don't know that one.
Well, you know, it's funny because she was in Amy's Maybird group last year, and I was riding with this girl, and I didn't quite recognize her, but she had, like, all the best stuff. Like, she had this brand-new bike that was super nice, and she had, like the best shoes, and it got kind of cold, and she pulled out this nice little jacket that shoved in her jersey neatly and just had...
Her kit's dialed.
Yeah, everything was just dialed. And I wasn't quite sure who it was, but turns out it's Stuart's daughter, Stuart Anderson.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Wally, or however you say that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. And she was even saying how she got a new bike and her dad got a new bike and she didn't even want one and stuff. I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense.
Hey, man, big salute to the folks keeping the bike industry alive, man. They're, you know.
That's awesome. Second place in JVA, so... that's super, super cool. So in region 2, which is the region I was in, that's why I was eating Pizza Cart in Cedar City this last weekend and the Monday before. So
life's hard for you, Dan, huh?
So So yeah, I usually kind of don't look too, I haven't really mentioned much about the junior, some of the junior Devo results. I just kind of lazily glance at the varsity and JV.
Well, I should say that we don't push results so much with the junior Devos. Our emphasis is more just like, go out, have fun, learn how to race bikes. We'll start, you know, really caring when you're a junior or a senior.
Yeah. But Axel Lamprecht, he raced first in intermediates and he did his first advanced junior Devo race and got third. And that kid is just such a good rider. He was in my group, my Mabry group. And
there's talent in that family, man. He's got shoes to fill, too.
He's, yeah, so awesome rider. And this one was super cool. He was, I saw this rider after the race, and he was just, like, on cloud nine. And that Soren Johnson, he got first place in intermediate eighth grade boys, which is an enormous field. That's Nora's
brother. Like, that's what, like 8,500 kids these days?
I mean, it's probably 60, 70 kids.
It probably registers seismically up at the U, you know, when those guys go off. That's an enormous group of kids. So to win that, man, that's killer.
Yeah, one of the Crockett clan, Liam, got second in intermediate. This girl, I like this girl because she comments on my Strava polls. So Marin Rendell from Skyline got first in advanced girls. So that's...
Whoa!
That's super
cool. I will say, like, we don't focus on results, but it does mean something when you win those. Like, you've got to be, you know, like, especially with the level where it is today, like, winning those is not everybody who, you know, ends up on a varsity podium did win those, but if you do win those, a varsity podium is kind of the direction you're headed eventually. So bravo to those guys.
And then Mia Baker, Miles' little sister, got second.
There you go.
Race, so
shoes to fill there, too.
Yeah. So, boys varsity out in Cedar City, the Skyline Pink A group, which is a group I get a ride with for Skyline, almost dominated the podium again.
Oh, did they let us down?
Well, so we had Gabe, then Oliver, Miles, and then a Morgan kid got in there, then Ben. And you're probably asking, where's Andrew?
Mm, yeah, I was going to say, there's an omission from that podium there.
Yeah, so it was Andrew got a bad sidewall tear. Brady ended up running and grabbing his wheel from his bike, and they did a bike wheel swap, which in Nike is a 10-minute penalty or whatever.
Which I'll just come out and say, ridiculously stupid. Carry on.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, my soapbox over.
So Andrew Preston actually got last place.
Hey, you know what? He should just collect them all.
You know? But the funny thing is, I've never seen anyone so happy about getting last place. And, you know, and the thing is, I just think it's cool that Brady would run and get a wheel, and that I guarantee Andrew was laying down some watt bombs that whole entire race. And
the highest ever normalized power
probably,
for a last place finish in history.
He probably passed a whole bunch of people, you know, and, probably had a great race, you know, but he finished just so happy. He was so smiley and just I just can't say how much I love that about that kid.
One of my favorite cycling facts is that there is an award for coming in last place in a lot of the big races. So in the Tour, it's the Lantern Rouge, right? And then in the Giro, it's called the Mayanera, the black jersey. And it's actually kind of celebrated to get it because it's the person coming in last
usually
is almost always someone who had some big problem, and for them to finish is awesome.
Unless it's me.
Unless it's you, then it's because they suck. But like coming in the last, you know, eighth of riders, maybe you're just slower. But like if you're coming in last and still finishing, that's usually someone that gets, or like the last, it's always the last guy to finish Paris-Roubaix has some insanely harrowing story about how they've been alone since kilometer three because their bike exploded underneath them or something. So like there is honor in finishing races. And I would say too that like the reality is, yeah, if you get a bad flat, you're probably out of contention for a win, maybe a podium. You should still finish the race. And from a points perspective, you should still finish the race as an ups to your team, especially if you're in the varsity field. But there is honor in finishing races. And it's crazy that Nike penalizes people for doing that. That's all I'll say.
You know, whenever people ask me for my advice before a race, I have one piece of advice I always go to because it's my favorite. And it's been my favorite for years and years and years and hasn't been replaced. And that is just give it everything you've got and finish happy.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought Andrew was just a perfect example of
that
because he was just so smiley after the race and was having fun and just, so I just love that about that kid.
Do your best, and what will be, if your best is you winning, that's great. If your best is not you winning, you should feel exactly the same, because none of this matters, guys. No one's getting paid to win Nike races.
But then this is the one I really, really want to emphasize my shout out to, and that's Seth Sherrington.
Oh yeah.
He got sixth, and that is just such an awesome result for him. He has just been working so hard, and I am just so darn proud of him. And he just had an awesome ride. I mean, he came in just a teeny bit behind Ben, you know, yeah.
I'd love to be finishing a teeny bit behind Ben.
Oh yeah. Like that's so impressive. Ben Bigwood did the race the week after finishing point to point,
which is crazy, but also very Ben coded.
So Ben, get some rest. We'll talk about that later. But
rest is when you don't ride your bike and you put your feet up and watch some TV. I'm so good at it.
Yeah, so that was boys varsity. Boys JVA, we had Braden and Miles Crockett were both on the podium. I can't remember exactly what places they got. Mark Nilsson, one of your boys, had a mechanical.
You sheared his derailleur off.
Yeah, they made him a single speed. He did a whole lap as a single speed, which is super cool.
Someone should do a research project on how he has such bad luck. It must be like, I don't know if it's like genetic or if he, you know, if he like is paying back for spiting a deity in the previous life or something. But he's another great example. He's just hard-headed, dude. He's going to finish the race no matter what. Because if my derailleur fell off, I'd pull out. I'm soft, you know, like good for him. Good for him for finishing that.
Absolutely. So girls varsity in Cedar City was just super exciting.
Yeah.
Way exciting. Helena had an amazing race. She was just a warrior that race. Just went off hard, rode hard the whole time, super, super fast. She got second place, but just by about a little over a second. It almost came down to a sprint finish. Just super, super good race for her. She's been working super hard. McCall came in just behind her. McCall actually was racing with a tube and 25 PSI.
Yeah, so sweet.
So that probably didn't help out.
Hey, that's only like 10 more PSI than she ought to be running, right? You know, that's crazy.
Well, it's funny because at Cedar City, I like before the races, I helped the varsity boys and varsity girls kind of get their bikes ready. And I was putting in less pressure than people were asking for. I was putting in the pressure kind of low. And when I found out one of the riders got a flat, I'm like, oh shoot, I hope that's not someone I know. And I didn't touch Andrew's bike before the race, so I was okay.
That one wasn't your... I'll tell people, I've got Tessa running like 17 PSI right now.
Yeah, I was running like, I was setting everyone lower. At like 16, like 16 up front, 17 in the back.
I mean, like you and I are riding a little bit more because we're heavier, but like for these Nike kids, man, like if your coach is setting your tires at 24 PSI, dude, that's bad news.
Yeah. But Helena and McCall, they worked together throughout the race. They had a strategy.
Yep.
They went and they executed it almost perfectly. It was super cool race.
Which, by the way, is what you should be doing in Nike, like learning like the bike racing craft. That's just because like peace and love to the boys. I think the boys still race with the hit each other with 2x4 strategy, like the Mario Kart style racing. I do think there's a little bit more of a tactical.
I think the girls tend to be more strategic. Mm-hmm. Like,
oh yeah. As now a middle school teacher, I can confirm to you that girls are smarter.
Oh, they are way smarter.
That's not even like feminist Joe. That's just Joe that interacts with a whole bunch of kids all day. Yeah. Like that doesn't surprise me.
Girls are definitely smarter.
Oh yeah.
Then after McCall, Corinne Higgins came in, which is a super awesome result for her. That girl is such a good
not a
rider.
Surprise though.
And then Nora Johnson got fifth.
Dude, that's crazy.
So
man.
Cool to see Nora on the podium. And again, we know like most of the girls that are racing in both of these.
Well, they know each other and they're cool to each other, which I love.
Oh, I know. And they're just such good friends and they like hug each other and are just so.
They are paragons of professionalism. All the love in the world to the boys. They're great too. But like the professionalism and the you know, these sort of like up and coming cycling tacticians that we see in the women's field is awesome. I love it.
So I do want to shout out Carly Erickson. She and I saw this happen She was coming into the feed zone. Cedar City has, it's like really, it's like rock hard, like concrete hard.
Yeah.
And then it's got this tiny little layer of like teeny tiny little BBs almost, you know.
Ideal for grip.
And it just makes it, then that's why I was lowering people's tire pressure so much, because that helps a lot on that surface. But she went to grab a bottle, her bike just slid out, and she went down really, really hard in the feed zone. Finished the race strong, but it looked painful. So, way to go. And she still had a great result. Isabel Blackburn, from what I hear, was doing really, really well, and then took a wrong turn and wasn't doing as well.
Yeah, I did that a point to point. That's, you know, taking a wrong turn is always like an emotionally complicated moment where you're like, wow, this sucks for so many reasons. Yeah. Like,
but you know what? It's just an honor to cheer you guys on. You know, these people that are doing well have worked really, really hard.
None of those people are surprises.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like we see it all year. Like, you know, people put in the work, and the sad thing is, it's like everyone who's there deserves to be there, but there are people who deserve to be there who aren't by virtue of bad luck. You know, like it's not like hard work's a guarantee, because it is bike racing. It's complicated, you know, but
99.5 times out of 100, it definitely helps.
Well, it helps for sure. Like, you can't get there without it, but just know, if you're like, if you're not seeing it yet, it doesn't mean that you didn't work hard, because like, bike racing isn't just about being strong and fit. Like, it's, you know, it's complicated, and it takes, and the other thing too is just a Nika, because we always want to say, for like, we want to praise the kids who are doing well, but like, a lot of people, like I always say that like, the races that I do the best at are the races that feel the easiest to me, and that there are a lot of warriors out there suffering like dogs and then getting a result that doesn't sound as impressive. Like, your effort matters too. And just remember that like, a lot of these people we're talking about had to be patient for a sec for things to click and for it to make sense. And
that's the thing too. It is easy and kind of lazy of us just to kind of highlight the podiums.
Yeah.
Because there's so many other battles that we're missing that are just as awesome and and personal and important. And, you know, we just can't drop. No,
and truly, I don't know how often you do well in races, and that's not like I do all the time either, but like, the races where I've been like racing for a podium, or I'm like, whoa, this is a good day or whatever. Like, those days are easier than the days when you're like suffering like a pig, just to
hard not to be last.
Exactly. Right. Like, those are the one, I mean, those performances deserve all the plaudits too, but there are like 300 of you. So, you know, good job to everyone.
So again, parents, well, if your kid did something awesome that we're not aware of,
oh gosh, please tell us.
Please tell us.
Yeah. Like, it's not, you know, you won't hurt our feelings. We want to be shouting people out, and they deserve it. I'm sure we've done an episode. We've done a lot of episodes that touch on this. I don't know that we've done like a fatigue episode to circle back to my opening kind of joke for you there.
Oh, yeah. You said a joke.
I did. I did. And joke. I don't know that we've done like a fatigue episode.
I think we kind of have, but...
Well, we've done episodes that involve it, but this is good to talk about, because so, we're kind of getting to that point in the season where a lot of people are maybe feeling like, whoa.
Exactly.
I've been going full gas since, you know, first week of March, and oh boy, my brain and my legs are feeling it, right?
Because I honestly have a topic, and it's nutrition related, that I am just so excited about, and for 2 weeks I've been planning on doing that episode, and just this last... I don't know. It was like Sunday, like yesterday, I kind of decided to go this direction. So, haven't put a whole lot of thought into it, but it's just some stuff we've gone over before. But I just think that it's just vital that we talk about this right now. Super, super important. So let's just go into it. So Joe, would you say that a disappointing race is more often due to lack of fitness or fatigue?
A disappointing race where you're performing worse than you expected to, you fatigue more often, right? Like, like
that was kind of a trick question, but you nailed.
I think I found the. Should I do it again and give you the wrong answer?
No. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Because
explain
that.
Your answer.
Well, it's like, you know, so like if you have someone who's finishing 100th place in a race, right? if you're disappointed with that one, that 100th, maybe you were hoping to be 75th, or maybe you're hoping to be first, right? That kind of says to me that you have the fitness, or you have some reason to think you're finishing higher, right? And this is a really, you know, this is a tough mental thing, I think, for a lot of kids to wrap their head around. Is like, I remember distinctly driving to Vernal for my first varsity race my senior year, and you and I decided that I would finish sixth. We took, these are the five kids who I can't beat, and these are the rest of the kids who I will for sure beat, right? Us back in our ridiculous, stupid pre-Maybird days. You know, that like, you always have these reasons to think, well, I for sure will beat Travis, but I can't beat Matt, right? And I think, like, looking back, for me, for sure, it was like, I guess I did have reasons to think that, but fatigue is this great confounding factor that exists in cycling, you know, that, like, I tell people, like, the Tour de France, and to some extent, like, the Mountain Bike World Cups are games of who can recover the fastest, because you're all fit. And, you know, if you're kind of getting to the pointy end of this, like, fitness is kind of taken for granted. Everybody's fit. Everybody's in good shape. And where you guys are young, everybody's light, too, all the time, right? So, like, being able to have the maturity to play the fatigue game well, and to burn your matches at meaningful times, and save your legs for the right attack to follow, right? Like, those are the games where you're going to start to crack into that last little 5% to be up with the top guys. Because again, like, everyone is so fit these days. The power numbers are way higher on average than they used to be.
Really well said. Because like a lot of times you'll just have like tons and tons and tons of fitness. You know, you've been doing this for like 3, 4, 5 years, some of you. And
the numbers on the power meter look really good.
You know, you trained, cross-trained during the winter. You've been consistent.
You've been disciplined. You've done all the right things.
You know, so yeah. And that's what was almost just kind of an epiphany I had, you know, that like a lot of times disappointing, well, pretty much most of the time, an actual disappointment is usually because of fatigue management.
Yeah. Because if you think you should be on the podium, you probably have a good reason to believe it. Like, if you think you should be on the podium and you've always finished 60th, that's probably a little delusional, right?
Yeah.
Most kids who really are emotionally attached to this idea of, and let's be honest, like, there's some shiny benchmarks, top 10, podium, win, top quarter, you know, whatever, top half for some people, right?
Not last,
right? Yeah, there you go. Whoop, whoop, right? It's hard not to attach yourself to those. And it's so easy to be like, oh, well, you could feel like you had a bad day. You didn't really try. But if you still finish on the podium, it's the podium, right? It's like the shiny thing that we're always reaching for. And I think that that's one of those kind of emotional maturity things that you grow into over time. Because you have to think about, too, the personality style attracted to this. Like, I tell people, like, our job as coaches is not to motivate kids ever. Like, anybody who's riding in Maybird is at least a little bit motivated. Like, these are people who are willing to go out and work. They're willing to suffer. They're the kind of personality types that are attracted to doing uncomfortable things and having long-term goals. The problem with those people is usually holding them back and pulling on the reins, not, you know, kind of whipping them into, you know, carry. Like I'll be honest with you, like, with me as a teacher now, trying to get my kids to read, that's like, hey, do this. That is not the battle we're fighting on Maybird.
Oh, man, if Maybird's success depended on my ability to motivate people.
Oh, my gosh.
We would be pretty pathetic.
No, yeah. I mean, maybe occasionally you tell somebody to try, but I don't know. They're usually not making it. Maybe in the high school team where a lot of kids are there against their will, but like, if you're listening to this, you don't have a motivation or willingness to suffer deficit. That's not your problem.
Absolutely.
More than likely.
So fatigue is kind of hard to define. And there's not like a great concise definition for it, but a definition that's kind of being used is simply, to kind of put in simple terms, is basically not being able to push as hard as you want to be able to push.
Yep.
Which, when you think about it, that's kind of sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
And you know, there's different, and we have done a podcast before on fatigue, and there's kind of peripheral fatigue, and that's like my hardest word to say ever.
Peripheral. I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I had a hard time saying mm-hmm. that.
I'll never let it go.
I also can't say, what's the other word I can't say?
Oh, how long you got?
Oh, specificity.
Specificity?
Yeah. Peripheral and
specificity. Some peripheral specificity is Dan's arch nemesis there.
Which should probably be the word of our podcast.
No, peripheral specificity is your secret word. We're only, 29 minutes in. You've already got it.
Because
I felt this. I know what you're talking about, where it's like, you can't push yourself. Like, sometimes I can push myself so hard, I'm worried I'm going to die. And then other times, man, just getting out of zone three just feels like the hardest push ever, right?
Yeah, and so peripheral, I don't want to say that word anymore today because it just hurts my brain to say it. But that basically kind of refers to things that are more like, more kind of short term, almost kind of like your core temperature, your glycogen levels, your any like muscle fiber damage. That's kind of like the type where, if you're doing like a 3 minute all out interval, no willpower is going to get you to that fourth minute. It's just your body just kind of shuts down. And then there's more of the central, which is probably more really what fatigue is. And that can either kind of be like a more prolonged stress that you've been dealing with, kind of accumulated stress, or it can also kind of be like I kind of think of it like your check engine light. You've got like when your check engine light goes off, it could be like your gas cap's loose, or it could be like you're missing a spark plug. I don't know that much about cars.
I think cars still have spark plugs, do they?
I don't know.
I have no idea. I drive a Prius. I shouldn't comment.
Or it could be like some EGR valve is gone bad, which means you have to pay $600 for your car to feel just the same after they fix it.
Oh, you have some beef here. This seems like you've got an axe to grind.
Okay, that was getting a little personal.
Oh, that was too specific to have been made up.
but any one of those things will kind of turn on your check engine light. And I think fatigue can kind of be like that. You could be low on glycogen, you could be low on fuel, you could be low on blood sugar, your muscles could be damaged, a whole bunch of different things could kind of turn on your check engine light.
Right.
When your check engine light's on, your body will sometimes kind of slow yourself down as kind of a preservation means, because we kind of have like systems in place to make sure that we don't push ourselves beyond what's safe or what's healthy and so forth. So.
Yeah, like your body will, we've said this before, like your body will shut it down before, your body's job is to stay alive.
Yeah. And we've done podcasts when we did the How Bad Do You Want It?
Yeah, because we talked about this.
You should go back and listen to that because I think it's a low bar, but I think we did pretty good on that one.
Yeah.
I think you should go back and listen to that one. But I mean, you can take and you can kind of, your check engine light comes on and you can push on a little bit more beyond that. And that's what elite athletes do. They know that they can kind of like, once that comes on, they'll push beyond it a little bit, and that's good. And that's important, to be able to perform well. You have to do that. But fatigue is something that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
So Joe, is fatigue bad?
No, I mean, fatigue's important. Like you're everyone listening to this, and again, just because of the personality types we're dealing with, you're not Superman. There's some outer limit to your capabilities. I know that sounds anti-motivational, but it's the truth, and the sooner you come to terms with it, the sooner you can manage it well. And fatigue too, you have to remember fatigue's not just an athletic thing. Like people have career fatigue. Like people talk a lot about like burnout in the job world. I think that's the same thing. And I think all of us have been, whether it's in school or even in a relationship, like there's times when it's like, oh my gosh, it's so easy to give this 110%. All I want to do is give this 110%, right? But I think you get to a point where it's like, I don't, and not that it's like a question of like caring enough. It's just like, I am too tired. I can't do it anymore, that you kind of feel. And like, I feel that, honestly, like I'm starting a new job right now, right? Like my, and fatigue blends into other fatigue, I'm like, it's not easy to motivate myself to go super deep right now. But in the summer when I was working at the bike shop and it was just, Tessa was in Canada and I didn't have that much on my plate. It was like, oh yeah, let's go so, so deep. Let's go to the boiler room of hell on the bike. Right. And I think that like a lot of Nike kids struggle with this because they're finally to a point in life where like academically they're being challenged more. College is coming, there's a lot more stress. You're starting this new athletic thing where you've just probably in your life haven't had this kind of cumulative pressure and the ability to do something great on the bike, you know, that I think a lot of people are probably feeling this for the first time right now. And it's confusing and scary because it feels like a lot of you probably define yourselves by your ability to do this crazy hard sport and then feeling like there's cracks in that, like there's weakness. I think a lot of people spiral when they realize that there is a limit to what they can do.
Yeah. So I think
another concise answer there. I'm sorry. No. I'm sick and like loopy right now. So I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah. So fatigue is not a bad thing.
No, it's necessary.
Yeah.
There you go.
It absolutely is. We talked before about like our sympathetic nervous system, which is activated when we're doing something stressful. You know, like we've talked about like running from a dog or doing
confrontation hard with your angry neighbor. Yeah. You know,
and, you know, it's also, and it's more easy to think of it as fight or flight.
Yep.
And whenever we're, our sympathetic nervous system is activated, it signals a need for adaptation. So basically fatigue, if it's acute, can signal a need for adaptation. Now, our parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest nervous system, that's where our bodies actually make these adaptations and we recover and make these adaptations. And that's kind of where, you know, that's like the whole point of training. You know, you stress yourself, you signal this sympathetic nervous system, you're fatigued, you're tired. But then when you rest and digest, your body makes adaptations and you become a better athlete. That's training 101 right there.
Yeah.
So it's like the fatigue kind of signals the adaptation, but the adaptations don't take place if you're constantly fatigued, you know?
Yeah.
So, if your parasympathetic nervous system is never activated, training kind of becomes it's less impactful. You know, you're not really adapting to the training that you're doing. So it kind of becomes, it can even become, get to a point where it can be pointless, you know, if you're trying to train under too much stress.
I've got to throw it. I think I'm maybe an example of this that like, I think for the amount I ride my bike, I should probably be better at this, but like I use cycling as a mental health crutch and I'm not good at controlling my eating. So I think I kind of use cycling as a medication replacement these days, and that I'm also using it as like a weight control, you know, again, cause I think because of the genes I have and I'm getting into my mid 20s now, I think I'm kind of sacrificing winning some race, well, not winning, but doing better in races on the altar of, I want to be able to ride my bike all the time. And in a weird counterintuitive way, the fact that I want to ride hard all the time kind of is precluding me from being super good at this. Like, and that's, again, that's another discipline thing that a lot of kids lack, is that like, you have to be able to rest hard and give some stuff up and be able to back it off so that you can truly go as deep as you need to be the best at this.
I mean, yeah, I ride a lot and I do it because it's like fun and I just want to do it. It's like the highlight of my day when I get to go ride.
Exactly. Yeah.
If I took care of the other side of the training equation better, I would be faster.
Yeah. Like I got back to riding way too soon after point to point because I just couldn't stand not to, and I'm bad at riding easy.
Yeah.
So I'm never near the top of a lot of leaderboards, and you know, as a result. I guess it depends on your goals, because like if you just want to ride to ride, if that's what riding is doing for you,
I do think the kids that we're directing this to are Nike racers that want
good
results and want to get faster, and so if that's something you're interested in, please listen up.
Like this is going to be more aimed at you than kind of people like me who have made other bad choices.
So like I said, you know, fatigue is good, especially if it's acute.
Mm-hmm.
It signals adaptation. But if you are chronically fatigued, you're going to be maladaptive,
mm-hmm.
you know? So the way I would just sum that up is, fatigue needs to be managed, not avoided.
Oh.
I made that up while I was driving home today, actually.
That's interesting you'd say that, because that's kind of the way that, like, and not that this, I promise this is connected. Like, in aerodynamics, the thought back in like the 90s and the early 2000s was just make everything as not in the wind as it can be, right? Like make the profile of the bike an inch, right? And then they've kind of realized that in aerodynamics, the way you really win is in managing the airflow, right? So like aero bikes look a lot different from the frontal profile than they used to. And it's an interesting parallel that like it's a fact of life, and the fact is you'll do better if you manage it. Not because the other thing is like the answer to avoiding fatigue is not to never do anything.
Oh yeah, because if you're never tired, that means you're not training hard enough.
And like this generally isn't the audience of this podcast, but maybe like Nike coaches, you kind of know the kids on your team where you're like, you don't need to worry about resting more. Like you need to worry about riding more than once a week, right? But yeah. for the crowd that's like on their bikes 6 days a week, 2-3 hours a pop every single time.
Yeah.
There's a limit, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you occasionally need to be fatigued, but you also have to have times where you feel really good.
Yeah.
You can't just be fatigued all the time, and you can't just be totally rested all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's something that needs to be managed and balanced. And the better you become at managing fatigue, the more training you'll be able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
The more training you can handle, the more adaptations you're going to get. And so all good stuff. But the more you neglect fatigue management, the deeper your hole gets and the longer it takes to dig out of it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and just mentally too. I don't think it's good to just be really tired all the time. I think people who are just completely exhausted all the time aren't happy. You're not able to push yourself. I think a lot of people kind of exist in the cycling world in this weird, sad survival mode, you know? And again, I think a lot of it just has to do with the personality type that's attracted to stuff like this.
So when people have disappointing results, they kind of come to this crossroads.
Yeah.
And there's almost kind of, well, there's a whole bunch of factors that, but we're going to boil it down to kind of two. Do you need to train more? Asterisks.
Yeah.
Or do you need to train less?
Asterisks. Yeah. Do you need to ramp it up or back off? Right.
Yeah. And, you know, and it really, the answer is it depends, because there probably are a lot of people, and I would probably say the majority of Nike riders probably do need to train more.
Oh,
and train harder.
The bottom, I don't know, 50 to 75% of any given field, depending on the field, I guess, it depends. Varsity's different than sophomore, right? But like, you know, the kind of bottom fourth of the field probably should be riding more with maybe a few exceptions, but probably.
I mean, I can think of a lot of riders that like really don't start taking Nike seriously until like 2 weeks before the
until
first race.
Until it's kind of too late.
And you know, and or they don't really start taking it seriously until school starts or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if you're one of those riders,
you probably don't listen to this.
Well, and I know quite a few that are pretty decent riders that's kind of how they do it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, and if that's what you want, then great.
And, but like, and those riders, I would say, you know, you're probably fine. You can probably push really hard throughout the whole Nike season, and you probably can't train well. I was going to say, you probably can't train too much. You still can, but you can push pretty hard throughout the entire season and not have to worry too much about it. I think you're going to be fine. You know, those riders, you know, if you can ride and train a little bit more, it'll probably help you out. But, you know, if you're one of the riders that have been, you know, you did like running or skiing over the winter, and you've been riding since the spring, and you've been racing all season long, and you've got a really, really deep base. You know, when you get to that crossroad of whether you need to, you know, you've had some disappointing results, you feel like you're stagnant, do you need to do more or less? You might need to do less.
Like if any of the riders that we listed earlier came to you and they were like, hey, the results aren't there. Like we're getting disappointing results. Like your advice to any of them would not be train your way out of it. We're going to work you out of it. We're going to interval your way out of this. Right. Like your advice to any of them would be like, and especially at the point we are in the season now, it's like, how much could you really move the needle anyway? Really? I mean, I know that you could,
yeah,
but like, you're not going to get out of a hole, you know?
But when I mentioned this crossroad and I said that you train more asterisks or train less asterisks.
Probably address the asterisk in the room.
Yeah. And the train more would probably be referring to intensity. you know, I think if volume's done correctly, it's usually not the culprit. But intensity, I think the abuse of that is usually the culprit in fatigue. So that's kind of where that asterisk came in. Because I do think a lot of times people get to that point where they feel like they're just not as fast as they should be. And so usually what happens is instead of doing two interval sessions a week, you start doing three or throw in intervals to every ride or try to do the intervals harder or so forth, you know. And I think that's kind of what a lot of times happens when people think they need to train more is they end up training harder. You know, they don't just all of a sudden start doing more base miles when their Nike season's not going the way they want it to. You know?
And I think in a weird way, people almost kind of gravitate to like, I need to suffer harder. I need to like, it almost turns into this weird religious thing.
This needs where to hurt more.
The more I hurt, the better I'll do. I'll just tell you really quick, the more I hurt, the better I'll do is just not an equation that's ever true in cycling. Like you have to be willing to hurt and be uncomfortable to do this, but you can't. Cause that was me. I mean, let me be honest. I'm talking about myself here that I was like, oh, you know, I must not be dedicated enough. I must not be suffering hard enough. And that's not, you know, I think especially for a kid, that's not true.
So let's talk about some signs that you might need extra rest. And this is this list is like not complete by any means. These are just a few things to look for. One is if your resting heart rate is a little bit higher than normal.
Mm-hmm. Something you should have an eye on, by the way. Everyone should be able to tell us roughly what your resting heart rate is. That's a good thing to know.
If your resting heart rate's elevated, that's usually a sign that you might need some rest. A big one, and this one is like if you really need some rest, is if you can't get your heart rate up during.
Yeah.
Like if I hear someone say during a race that they couldn't get their heart rate up above 160 or whatever it is, it's different for everybody.
Sure. Whatever your number is.
Whatever your number is.
Lower than you'd expect.
Yeah, that's usually a sign that you need to rest quite a bit. If zone two rides and threshold efforts feel hard, that's a sign you're fatigued. Like if you go to do like, say your thresholds, what would yours be like, Joe? Like 160?
Yeah. I mean like the mid 500s, okay. you know,
if your threshold's 230 and you ride at 230 for 5 minutes and it feels really, really hard, that means you're fatigued. That's
a red flag. Yeah.
If you go on a zone two ride and you're kind of in like what your normal zone two should be, and it doesn't feel right, that's a good sign that you're fatigued.
Yep.
So, another one is just motivation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're feeling it's harder to get out and do things, and that can be a sign of fatigue. And you know, trouble sleeping, eating, other mood, all those other things. There's lots of things.
And again, off bike fatigue can manifest on the bike too. I think, you know, like if there's some stressful situation that you're dealing with in your life, or if like you're really tricky juncture at school, it's if it's finals week or something, you're like, that's you
it's
can't
like fatigue is fatigue,
yeah,
like
you can't isolate that to one part of your
training
life.
Is still going to be maladaptive if the rest of your life you're in
is in if the rest of your life is a dumpster fire, like
yeah,
you can't protect cycling from that.
I think I have an antidote for that though, that's just genius, but we'll get to that. But anyhow, so yeah, let's talk about managing fatigue. You know, one thing I want to point out is that usually people that are dealing with the things we're talking about actually have really, really deep fitness bases. And one of the things that's cool about a deep fitness base is your fitness isn't flimsy.
No.
Like if you've got, like if you ran all winter long and have been riding pretty consistently all season long, taking a week off isn't going to do anything.
I'll throw out the number of LDS missionaries that come back 2 years later and are close to where they were pretty, like not overnight.
It takes
like,
them like a month or two.
Like
to get
Truman
back
Glasgow.
To
yeah. Look at what he's achieved. And he's what, a year or two off a mission or something like that. Like, yeah you know, it's, I mean, you still have to get it back and they didn't feel
rusty
the same
for a little while.
They didn't feel the same off the plane, but like certainly taking a week off, taking a month off isn't going to you know.
I wouldn't take a month off during the NICA season.
No, but like my point is that like there's you know
when you develop
it doesn't go
that
away.
Deep of a base, your fitness is not flimsy. Yeah,
you've earned something really awesome there.
Yeah, your body's like some of those changes that your body's made are fairly permanent. So, so let's talk about. I've got, and this is kind of lame, but I have 9 things listed. I don't, I was too lazy to come up with a 10th, but these are just 9 things that we should do during the NICA season that could help manage our fatigue better.
Mm.
And some of these I think might not rest real easy with some people, you know, and some of them are pretty, I don't know, like sometimes training just isn't intuitive. You know, there's things that just don't make sense until you really understand the reasons why. But so the first one's super important, especially for the lady riders, is managing our energy balance. And that just means make sure you are eating enough calories, that the calories you're expending are about equal to the calories you're consuming.
Don't want to be trying to cut during
that. This would be a really, like, if you're trying to lose weight, you are going to be slower.
Oh, yeah.
Period.
As always, standard disclaimer, don't be trying to lose a lot of weight unless your doctor tells you to. And if you're this person,
When you're 40 or 50, whatever. Go knock yourself out. But as a high school athlete...
Like, you can't be forgetting to eat breakfast and get... Because, I don't know, this is, like, not a problem I've ever struggled with, obviously, right? But, like, Tessa will be like, oh, it's dinner time. Man, I had a piece of toast earlier... That you can't like that. You can't do that. Yeah. That would be the same as getting 2 hours of sleep a night. You just can't do it.
And then make sure you fuel your rides, your workouts.
Yep.
You know, don't fasted training is kind of stupid.
Yep.
And
people who believe in that want to sell you a dumb book. You know,
especially fuel your key workouts.
Yep.
Like practice race fueling for your key workouts.
That's a skill.
Yeah.
Got to practice.
So we've
it.
Talked a lot about. That I'm going to talk more about nutrition. It's super important. That's number one. Okay. Number two is sleep.
Yep.
Sleep. Okay. Here's a challenge. Ooh. I want you guys to find me a better recovery modality than sleep, and I will give you $100.
I have a supplement I can give you 10% off on.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like you don't want to stay up an hour later at night in recovery boots. You know,
yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. I've caught myself almost doing that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to bed. Like all the time. Yeah. But especially if you're like in the NICA season and feeling fatigue, go to bed now. Yeah.
Just try it. Let's see what happens if you guys get an extra hour of sleep each night during the race season. My guess is that it'll probably make you faster.
Especially as teenagers, when you already should be getting the 9 hours of sleep that none of you are getting, like a teenage endurance athlete where your body's growing and you're doing this, like if you're getting 6 hours of sleep, that is a catastrophic disaster that you need to change yesterday.
Yeah. Tell your dates that you need to be home by 9.
Yep.
And in bed by 10, you know, at latest.
So. They'll think you're cool or not, but you know.
Yeah. You know, just throw the athlete card at them. They'll get it.
Yeah.
So, so sleep. That was number two. Number three, and this is one that I think might be a little counterintuitive and hard for some people to swallow, but do fewer interval days.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, hang on.
Do better interval days.
Ooh.
Do fewer but better interval days. I think you guys need at least 4 days between a race before you do an interval session, and probably about that between doing an interval session and doing a race. Like, I think that during the race season, I think most weeks, one interval session a week is probably plenty. On the off week, you could maybe do 2. But yeah, don't be doing 3. So, but I would say that, you know, make these sessions better. You know, really, really make them key workouts, make them count, get ready for them, rest up for them, fuel up for them, you know, find your limits and push them. Yeah, so do fewer but better interval sessions. Again, a disclaimer with intervals is just knowing when to quit super important. We're going to I wanted to do another podcast soon about intervals, but stimulate yourself, but don't destroy yourself.
Just make that a shirt that would never be taken out of context.
Once you start to suck, you've pushing beyond that, you're just kind of doing damage that makes recovery take longer. But yeah,
because I gotta throw it again, like not all effort feels equally hard. And you know what? Like when you feel good, going hard feels good. And you all know that feeling. Like, you know, when you've gone really deep, because you said, like, for me, it was like, I remember being a junior sophomore and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm winning the Psy Cup. Holy smokes. I dropped him. I could win this. I probably have never gone that deep and it didn't feel like that. Like my memory of that wasn't how bad it hurt. Right. And then I had some Nike races where it was like, wow, now I'm down to the 30s. Holy smokes. What a bad day. Like that's the day that like psychologically the pain will be with me forever. Like I left a chunk of my soul out there on the trails of Powder Mountain. Holy smokes. Right. Like race wins are not built on a foundation of just being miserable. Like if the effort should never feel amazing, but going hard feels good if you're doing it right in a weird way.
Quit your intervals when you start to suck. So
I should just never do intervals.
So fewer but better interval days. That was number three. Okay, number four is polarize more. And during this time of year, anyone I'm helping with, all their zone two rides, I start calling them low zone two rides. You know, during the spring and during the winter, if you're going to ride zone two, I would say ride on the upper end of zone two, you know, go for it. You're getting more KJs. Whatever. When it's race season, I would stick to the lower end of zone two.
Don't be messing around with overdoing it.
Yeah. You get a lot of the same benefits, but it doesn't like affect the quality of your racing and your intervals and so forth. So just make your work more polarized. You know, your easy rides, make them a little bit easier. Those interval sessions, make them just light them up, make them awesome. Okay. So yeah, number four was low zone two and polarize more. Okay. Number five, and this is the one that I kind of think is going to be the next big thing. You're going to start hearing more about it. You're hearing it from here first.
Probably. I think people spend less time reading white papers from Inigo San Milan than you do. This is a new thing for most people.
We've actually done a whole podcast on this one.
Still probably a new thing. Probably new for me because I forgot. But
Zone one.
Did we do a zone one
podcast? We did a whole podcast on zone
one. Oh, but that was a long time ago, right?
Like there's always kind of been a debate with people whether like, you know, zone one's beneficial or, you know, would you be better just staying home and sleeping on the couch or going on a walk rather than doing a zone one ride. But it seems like lately they're starting to find more and more benefits of actually even really, really slow rides as opposed to nothing at all.
Like going and riding with grandma here.
Yeah. These are like, I would say like zone one, you can breathe through your nose. Zone two, you have to breathe through your mouth a little bit. Like you'd be really uncomfortable, doing a zone two ride with tape over your mouth.
Welcome to Factor Cap. We go scare a lot of people at PCMR.
But if you can breathe through your nose or sing a song, you're probably in zone one.
Yeah. Okay.
So, because, you know, we mentioned, and here's what I think is kind of, and this is something, this isn't science. This is my own epiphany, but I think there might be some merit to it. But if we only adapt when we're in a parasympathetic mode, and if you're fatigued from a hard workout and then you're stressed about life, you know, you're kind of in that always stressed cycle, you know, it's going to be difficult to adapt to your workouts, right? But if a zone one ride can take that stress away and make you feel better and happy and some endorphins and joy, I think that zone one rides can actually help you adapt better to your other workouts by removing some of the stress in your life.
That's a good, especially as we're coming up on fall. Like if you need it, go and do a PCMR ride and get you a donut. Like, you know, go enjoy some pretty colors, whatever's, you
like
know,
a hot and ready pizza after.
That's true. Cause I don't think I'd ever tell someone like, no, don't go. Like if I think we undervalue the non-bike stress that goes on in our lives. Like every year, it seems like there's a new study about just how catastrophically bad for your health it is to constantly be stressed. Like Americans are the most stressed people, and it's manifesting in all these horrible health problems we're having and stuff. Like, do what you got to do. I mean, obviously here and there as needed, not always, right?
Well,
or maybe as always, I don't know.
We'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah, like a zone one ride for me, like it just, like just when I'm riding my bike, I tend to think less about work and stress and bills yep. and all this other.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. Like I constantly do, I can't stop doing it because it's my mental health crutch, you know?
You know, but if you can do it in a zone one, it's not adding excess fatigue, and it could, you know, it could be even taking away some of the extra stress in your life. But they're actually finding that there are some definite adaptation benefits to just riding at all, period. You know, just, you know, and I think too, you know, it's a way to help you rest and recover without getting rusty.
Yeah.
So do some zone one rides, you know, like maybe, you know, maybe the day after your big Nike race, just be off the bike completely. The following Monday, just go out for like a pleasure beach cruise. Zone one, you know, let other people pass you. They'll feel really good about themselves.
Wear plain clothes.
Yeah.
You know, like, or like go out just in shorts with no chamois to motivate you to not go too long, you know, like whatever you got to do, man, you know, so, don't worry if people pass you.
Okay. So that was number five. Give zone one rides a chance. I think they're pretty awesome. I think Brady is going to like this one because I think Brady's kind of into this kind of stuff because this is kind of the next level of training. You know, you kind of go like you get your heart rate monitor, you feel really, really cool. Then you get your power meter, then you feel even cooler. Then you get to this level and it's just the coolest. And that's being able to train by feel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
when you become a bike wizard.
Yeah. So sometimes you really need to kind of, in a sense, ignore your power meter because like if a zone two ride doesn't feel like a zone two ride, then it's not a zone two ride.
Yeah. Like what you were saying earlier, if you're like, you know what, 200 watts should not feel like this, then you're right. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, according to how I have my zone set, like, I'm in zone two when I'm around 180 to 210 watts. You know, that's kind of my zone two. And the other day, so I did point to point and then I rode again on Monday. And then I tried to do, and it was like bad weather on Tuesday. So I did an indoor ride on Zwift and I had the erg mode set at like, you know, like my usual zone two, and I couldn't even, it hurts so bad. I could have been doing like an FTP test.
Yeah.
That's about what it felt like. It was really, really like my legs were burning. I could feel lactate accumulating, you know, so I bumped it down to 160 watts and that kind of felt okay. You know, that kind of felt, and you know, and then a couple of days later I had the best legs ever. You know, I was like doing 220 and it felt easier than the 160 did a few days ago, you know? So if a zone two, just because your power meter says you're in zone two, your power meter doesn't know what's actually going on under the hood. It's a pacing tool.
Which is why it's awesome. Cause the power meter tells you how much power you're producing. That's its only job. Right. And
the reason the power meter is awesome is because it helps you understand how you are feeling. Because like, mm-hmm. you know, if you look down and you're doing 160 watts and if it feels really, really hard and it feels like garbage, that means you might be fatigued, you know. But if you're doing 200 watts and it feels easy, that means you might be pretty fresh, you know. So it just kind of helps kind of inform your perception a little bit.
Because like if you had decided to just push through, it's like even if you're able to push through that ride to keep achieving what that zone two should be,
yeah,
there's no point to that. You shouldn't have, you know, which is why like a lot of people are probably riding without power meters, having days where like, oh man, I'm crushing it. I'm going so hard. And they're producing 45% less power than they usually would be because they're so fatigued, but they don't have the power meter to tell.
They don't realize it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the beauty of the power meter is that it doesn't know.
But yeah, like, you know, if your coach tells you to do a zone two ride, you're doing a zone two ride based on your power and it feels like a sweet spot ride or a threshold ride, you're not in zone two anymore.
Nope.
So I think for zone two rides, your feel trumps just about everything. So so we're talking about paying attention to how your rides feel. Rides should never feel wrong. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, no, because that's what I was saying. Like when you want to go hard, like if you're to this level, you know what it feels like to go hard and have it feel right.
Yeah.
Like it's insanely painful, but like...
But it feels kind of good in a weird way.
And again, like I think the personality type that's get this far into this, you really shouldn't have to be like giving yourself that much of a pep talk to get through it. Like it's, you know, if you're really having to pep talk yourself through it, that's probably a bad sign. I don't know. Is that a hot take?
I think that like going hard should feel kind of good, but in a weird way is kind of how I'd explain it.
Yeah.
But you just know that time when you're going and it just doesn't feel right. You know, like nope. You're riding with your group, they're going air quotes zone two.
And you're like, oh my gosh, there's no way this is zone two.
It feels like threshold plus to you.
Mm-hmm.
Your legs are burning. You've got to recognize when rides don't feel right. So rides should feel right. And the thing is you need flexibility in this case because like interval workouts can become zone two rides and zone two rides can become zone one rides and zone one rides can be like going home and taking a nap, you know, just based on how you're feeling. And always you should kind of give yourself permission, you know, if you've given yourself a chance, you tried the workout out, gone out and ridden for an hour and you're still just not feeling it, there's probably something better you can be doing with your time.
Because in the first 10 or 15, if you're not feeling great, give your stomach a second to settle, blow out the cobwebs, do the first maybe one or two, but maybe not if the second one you're like, this doesn't feel better still, this still feels wrong.
Yeah. And on the flip side, like if your coach has scheduled you to do intervals tomorrow, but you're feeling pretty dang awesome today.
Knock them out.
Swap it. Yeah, swap it.
Yeah.
Know? Like, don't do them both days.
Yeah.
But, training by feel is so important. I worry a lot of kids with all the training peaks and power meters and stuff. I think I'm worried we're losing the art a little bit. You know, I mean, those are valuable tools and they're important to understand your perception, but
they're just tools.
They're just tools.
Yeah.
So, and another thing too is I think it's really easy for coaches to prescribe too much.
Oh yeah.
You know, when you're writing training, you know, you're just kind of thinking of all these things that people need to work on and these things that could be beneficial. And it's just really easy to have eyes bigger than your stomach when it comes to planning training. So So train by feel, recognize when things are going good and then go for it. And when things aren't feeling right, you know, change plans.
I think a lot of people listening to this would be shocked at how simple and intuitive the training plans of our varsity podium people are.
Yeah.
They're not twice as good as you because they're twice as complicated.
The kids I train, I almost feel bad at how simple their training is.
Like you've told me before you'd feel bad charging them. Right.
Yeah. It's ridiculously simple. And
Maybe it's a red flag. For what it's worth, I'll say this because you don't want to. It's kind of a red flag if your coach is prescribing training that is just ridiculously complicated. They might be trying to justify the amount of money you're paying them. Not to throw anyone under the bus, no one I can actually name off the top of my head does that. I've just heard, I've seen screenshots of Training Peak stuff where I'm like, oh, this is hideous. What on earth?
Yeah,
are
if you're doing
a
Zwift
here?
Work, like the workouts on Zwift are like the perfect example of what you.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
But yeah, so that's training by feel. We could do a whole podcast on that.
We could do a whole podcast on it, and we will. We're running out. Don't worry.
Okay, so So I've said before, we're moving on to the next one. You
what number are we on, by the way? I keep talking too much.
We're on 7.
Oh, okay, I'll shut up.
So how are we doing on time?
110.
Okay.
I'll be quiet now.
No. This is fun, right, everyone?
yeah, right, both of you? Still listening to this?
Okay, so the next one is rest weeks, ?
Ooh.
So typically during the NICA season, I encourage people to like get plenty of rest before a race and then rest a few days after a race. And in most cases, I think that kind of gives them enough rest. They don't really have to worry about planned rest weeks like they normally would. But this is where you got to listen to your body, because maybe you need more than that. You know, and it's amazing what 3 consecutive days of quality rest can do.
Not going on hikes instead of bike rides. Real rest.
Yes, yes. But you might need a full week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you kind of are into that, you know, if you are kind of like that, where you think that you might need some deeper rest, that's where I would suggest like a week of zone 1. You know, maybe gradually make them longer as the week progresses, and then, you know, do a longer ride on the weekend and kind of test yourself out and see if you're feeling better. I like that, because then, you know, if you just spend an entire week off during the NICA season, you'll probably come back feeling pretty rusty and icky. But, you know, if you can do actual nose breathing, song singing, zone 1 rides for an entire week, I think you would end that week feeling pretty good and ready to handle more hard training after.
Quick reminder, if you're like the vacation that always seems to happen in the middle of the NICA season for every kid, like, might be quality rest, might not. If you're going on a week-long fishing trip, you're going to be in a boat for 11 hours a day in the sun,
not sleeping,
working
hard, and eating.
That's not restful. You know, like if the vacation happens, you know, because that's something we address this all the time. That's like one of the most common. I have this vacation coming up. What on earth do I do? You know, and that like maybe strategically plan those to be, you know, chilling on the beach and getting tons of rest and, you know, eating plenty and stuff. But don't be afraid of the rest week if you need one.
Yeah.
Which is something that's also hard for a lot of people who are this deep into this sport as a youth to, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. But you know, I would say that maybe a lot of you listening might just need to do an intensity free week.
Yeah.
You know, like you just, the whole week you do zone 1 or zone 2 rides and then, you know, maybe do some opener, you know, maybe do an interval workout before your next NICA race or something, but you might need a little break from intensity. So, okay. Number 8, we don't need to go into this one too deeply, but kind of trying to limit other stress. There's some things you can control, some things you can't control. One thing I would throw out there is like, I know a lot of, I'm not against cross training. But I do think cross training is better when it's done in its respective seasons. And so I think a lot of kids that try and incorporate a lot of running with their riding, that's great, but it will 9.5 times out of 10 negatively affect your cycling.
You don't have, like, pro cyclists aren't running now. They're for sure running in the winter.
Oh yeah. I am all about it in the winter and the spring. And
again, if you really love it, do both. Sure.
Yeah,
but like,
but
it's
just
not,
know that
it's not helping.
It's not helping, and it's probably extra stress.
Yeah. You know? We're never going to tell a kid not to go out and go on a run. Cause that's great that you want to do that. Good for you. Your life's better for it, but it's not helping. Or like kids who like are juggling this with swim team. We had some kids doing that. Like,
or soccer. Yeah. You know, well, that's a whole different topic. And
right. It's probably not helping on the bike though.
Yeah.
Usually.
I mean, there might be good reasons for it.
Yeah.
But
probably not helping on the bike. Yeah.
Do things in their respective seasons and kind of. Let's see, what was it? Oh, yeah. And like hikes are fun. Hikes are good. Just right now, keep them easy and pleasant. You know, bagging peaks might not.
Or just recognize that it's not ideal.
Yeah.
And bear that in mind. If you want to do it, do it. It's your decision to make. But if the goal here is to optimize your performance at NICA right now, now's not the time to bag a peak.
So last one, number 9, is seriously have fun.
Yeah, I know it sounds cheesy and like a cliche, but like, it's not. Don't laugh at smart things. Like, you know, if you're not having fun, oh my gosh, what a ridiculous waste of time and money. What an insane way to light thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours on fire if you're not having fun doing this.
You know, ride with your friends, go get Cafe Rio after.
Yeah.
Sit in the parking lot and talk and laugh and, you know.
You just... Don't be a training monk. Training monks never do that well. You know, people who enjoy it and revel in it and find joy in the journey are the ones that do well. I think it bugs you when I say this a little bit, but like, I would never encourage anyone to be a professional cyclist. Like, you should be doing this to bring joy into your life and to make you a better person who's able to make the world a better place.
Unless
that should
you're
be
just ridiculously talented, then
it
you
will
can.
Find you. You'll know if I'm wrong, you know. But like, do you get the point that I'm making, though?
No, for sure.
Like, this should, don't treat this like your job. You know, the reality is most of you won't do jobs that you derive a ton of joy from. Somebody needs to do accounts receivable for a grocery store. Probably not getting a whole lot of joy out of that. The bike is what that's for.
Absolutely. And I tell kids too that, you know, you're dealing with so much right now. You've got a lot of stress in your life. The bike should be the fun compartment of your life, not yep. the stress. You know, you should not stress out about other things. Don't stress out about this.
Like, I remember in school, like, I was so stressed about the bike that I just would not push myself academically. Which in retrospect was like the most insane choice ever, especially considering my level of talent. Like, that was a really wild choice on my part. But again, I just keep coming back to, it's just, there's a really interesting and particular personality that's attracted to this. And you know what? Most of the people doing this are high achieving scholars too. You know, and you know, yeah, your parents,
like, our best writers also have good grades.
No, like, we don't have, like, we don't have, there's never been any like, should we have like a minimum GPA to be on this team? Because like, who would it like affect, you know? I have the lowest GPA on this whole team, you know, like, so yeah, I don't know. Like, definitely have fun. This sport, if you're not having fun, I have no idea how you're managing that. Because, so like, really quick, maybe to close this, my brother-in-law lives in Montreal right now, and he literally calls me every day to tell me how excited he is to move back to Utah and learn how to ride mountain bikes. Like, you are all living someone's dream life right now.
We do.
Oh my gosh, if you're not enjoying this
Thursday, what a lot of people do on their vacations.
Yep. On their once in a lifetime, oh my gosh, that was the coolest weekend of my life thing, is your life. Like, on if you just made a collection of like the one sentence summary of different human lives, living in Salt Lake City, being a youth mountain bike racer on your own terms with your parents sponsoring you is right up there with like billionaire in a yacht in Dubai somewhere. Like, it's an insanely awesome life to have been dealt. If you don't enjoy it, what a tragic waste. Oh my gosh. Enjoy the heck out of this, man. You know, especially the time of year we're coming up on. Oh, dude, yeah. It's magic. It's so...
It's energizing. It's fun. Like, go on a ride. In fact, I challenge you.
Here we go.
Go on a ride and follow it with pizza, donuts, and apple juice.
Yep. Dude, it's a religious experience. Yeah. It's as good... It is as good as life gets.
We'll forget what I said about the fructose episode.
It will destroy your ability to derive joy from anything else in your life, though. Like, and I tell people that all the time. Like, I think I experience such profound joy so often that it kind of blunts the joy I would get out of the other more simple pleasures in life. That, like, you know, some of this other stuff, I'm like, man, walks in the park just don't do it for me. Like, when you've got, like, Park City fall rides. Or, like, we were riding up in Alta the other day with the Skyline boys, and I was like, I don't know that my brain can like fully even appreciate how awesome this is. It would explode. So, dude, enjoy the heck out of this. The cynical take is like, your lives aren't going to get any better from here. Like, it's downhill from here. So really enjoy it while it lasts. That's not entirely true, except it is. Yeah. Enjoy the heck out of it. Don't let people try to tell you that like being a training monk and not enjoying it and suffering more, like, don't be a masochist. There aren't masochists who are bike race winners. You know, enjoy the heck out of this.
All right.
Did I talk way too much? I feel like you kept asking me really simple questions, and then I'd go on this like unrelated diatribe of like quasi proto emotional garbage, and just like, I am so out of it. I've had such a long day. I'm not going to lie. Like, the thought of going and doing this podcast, I was like, I have been talking. I basically feel like it's like an 8-hour hostage situation every single day. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go talk about fatigue on the bike. Here we go. Like, the two slowest people all of you know. We're like, here's what you really got to do. I'm going to stop meta deconstructing this podcast and we'll move on.
Are you on a ladder right now?
Anyone want to sponsor us? Any so other?
Joe needs a nap. What's our word? Peripheral?
Peripheral. What was it?
Just peripheral.
Our word is I need new medications. Yeah, the word is peripheral. You can't spell it right, though. The word is peripheral, but it can't be spelled right to count. You can spell it wrong however you want, but it can't be right.
Okay.
Okay. There we go.
All right.
I'll look forward to texts from all both of you soon. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and fall off the ladder today because I'm too tired to climb off. Peace and love. Ride safe. Don't make bad choices. Enjoy yourselves. Find a better podcast.